will be the Walt Harper tape. We're going to start our interview right now. Walt?
Yes, sir.
I asked you before, what was that E in your name? What did that mean?
That means Eugene.
Eugene.
And my whole family went by the middle names. Mm. Don't ask me why. I never asked.
But everybody had a... Your brother Nate, now what was his first name?
What was the Nate's first name? Edgar.
Okay, so but he yeah. went by his Nate. Middle name.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. How did you first get interested in music?
Well, I come from a musical family, so what my brother was a very recognized piano player. And my older brother played bass, and Nate, who worked with me, played tenor sax.
Right.
But we all got it from Ernie.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, what was the bass player's name? What was his?
Chuck.
Oh, I never met him.
No, you never met Chuck. Yeah, sir. He was 12, 13 years older than
okay.
Was, yeah.
He was the oldest brother then.
Right.
Well, did he play professionally too?
No, he didn't play professionally. Yeah. He just played for his own kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that was good.
Yeah.
And let me ask you this, what style of music, if there is a style that you had or you enjoyed, what style of music do you like, did you like, or do you like?
Well, I'm a bass in Ellington aficionado.
Mm-hmm.
And and both of them told me if you doesn't swing, you don't see them patting their feet, you're in trouble.
You're doing nothing.
Yeah. So I always, style of the group, as you know, is you can pat your feet by,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which radiates from the bass player and drummer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I imagine you like all types of good music, even at that.
Right, your
preference
right.
would be that style, but if it's right. good, you kind of like it anyway. Huh?
Right.
I'm about the same way there. I like anything that has some thought behind it and is good.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But I like Duke Ellington was my man too.
Yeah,
I guess
good.
It's about every jazz
good.
Man in the
yeah.
world.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Duke Ellington. How about on piano? Did you have any favorite people that you...
Well, yeah, I like Oscar Peterson and Art Tatum and Earl Gardner, who I love, was a close friend of mine.
And Earl was from this area too, wasn't he?
Yeah, right out in East Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you ever play on the same bill with Earl at all? Or? On the same.
We had Earl at, I had Walt Harper workshops during the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And Earl played on a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
We would play first, then Earl
right.
and his trio would play.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, because right. he mostly had his own trio. He didn't play
right.
too many other people by
no.
himself. Well, let me ask you this. When did you first get your first piano?
Oh,
how did you get it?
The first piano I got, my dad was a contractor and someone gave him a piano.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very small at that time. And he brought the piano home.
Mm-hmm.
And Ernie played it for years. Mm-hmm. And then I grew up and liked what he was playing, so... he taught me,
mm-hmm.
About jazz.
Right. Well, was it one of those upright pianos?
Upright, like, yeah.
Everybody, yeah. Everybody, that thing was so heavy, it took five people to
put
it.
Yeah, it took five
yeah.
people, that's what it took.
You
to.
Better believe it. That, I had one,
yeah.
We had one in our living room, and boy, that thing was heavy as it
oh,
could be.
Oh, yeah.
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 My mother was a concert pianist, too.
Oh, I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Oh, yeah.
Mother.
Oh, yeah. She's,
yeah.
She studied the Bessel Conservatory of Music. That's an old conservatory in this area.
Oh, really?
Many, many years ago. Yeah, okay. Before I was born. So,
no kidding. Yeah. Well, they had to be real old, of course.
Well, when did you first start playing, semi-professionally, before you went in to be a professional here?
From my teens, I played professionally when I was 17. Mm-hmm. I started, but up to then, I was like semi-professional. Mm-hmm. I played well enough to play for house parties and stuff.
Yeah.
And I got invitations to play at these parties. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's about the way we all started.
Yeah, right.
Well, did anybody ever ask you to join the union, or had you thought about it at that time?
Oh yeah. I would see Mr. Jackson, and
he was the president.
He was the president. And he would tell me, "You better join." So I joined. I joined in. I was in high school. Yeah.
Which high school did you go to?
I went to Shenley.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who was your music teacher there in Shenley?
A guy named Mr. Hill.
Mr. Hill.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mr. And I played baritone horn in the orchestra.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And were you in the marching band or the orchestra? What?
I was in the orchestra because we didn't march.
Mr. Hill. Well, when did you first join Local 471?
Oh, I suppose I was 17.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, when you were in high school, you joined.
Right.
Yeah, amazing. And hence Jackson was one of the ones that encouraged you to join. Yeah. What was your first experience as a member of 471, I guess?
We had a job and we played Fifth Avenue High School's graduation.
That was your first?
Was the first. Right. First job, yeah.
Well, was it your band?
It's my band. Yeah, right.
Well, who was in that band, though? Can you remember some of them, at least?
Bradley Blewett played tenor.
Yeah, I remember him.
And Marcus Kelly was on bass.
Uh-huh.
And Harold Lee was on drums.
Harold Lee?
Yeah, Harold Lee was on drums. He had a trumpet player. I'm trying to think who that was.
Mm-hmm. But that's a long time.
Yeah.
Now Bradley Blewett, I remember him.
Yeah, I'll think of it.
Yeah. And you were around 17 when you did this.
Right.
And the instruments, and what kind of music were you playing at that time?
We was playing, jazz.
Were you?
Yeah, we were
popular jazz things at that time.
Yeah.
You remember any, maybe one song from that time that was real popular? Can you remember anything that was A-Train, I guess?
Duke put out, they had a Duke Ellington book.
Uh-huh.
And I went to Vocalize and got the book and copied about 20 numbers.
Right.
Someone told me that you need 20 numbers to play a job.
Right.
So I copied and arranged 20 numbers out of the book.
That's
which Take the A-Train was one of them.
Well, I can imagine, yeah.
And I Love You Madly. Mm-hmm. Love You Madly, mm-hmm. Right or Wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like the title of a song.
That's right.
Yeah, that was one.
That's good. You got some of the good ones at that time.
Right.
Did you work at other jobs at non-music to make ends meet, or did you just...
Oh, yeah. This was before we was in the... No, this was right at the time we had joined the union.
Mm-hmm.
And as my name became known a little bit, they had other little jobs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which didn't pay much, but...
Well,
that
time, you're doing good to even that age.
Right.
But you didn't have to work at any other job other than music to make ends meet. Because you were staying at home, I guess.
Staying at home,
with your parents.
Right.
Did you play mostly in clubs, or did you play in rehearsal bands or parties or private homes and things like that?
I did them all. Yeah, all that you say, I did.
Everyone, I guess we're all the same way.
Yeah.
At that time. Yeah. Did you ever work with any touring bands?
Not really. But we would go on like semi-tours with like Nat King Cole.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
And
with your own group.
Yeah. And the Blazers, we backed a whole lot of singing groups. Right. Yes, yeah.
Was this with the same group that you played?
Same group,
played the prom. You stayed together quite a while too, then.
Yeah, right.
Well, now when did Nate come into the picture as far as playing tenor?
Nate came into the picture. Bradley Blewett, for some reason, quit playing, and then I got Nate.
Oh, okay.
You know,
yeah, right.
He came into the picture.
Did you? You did some traveling. You said with behind or opening four different
bands. Right.
Can you give me some of the cities that you might have gone to?
Oh, we went up north. We played Boston, and we played colleges like Colgate, not Harvard, Brown University, and of course we played for Pitt and Duquesne and
Carnegie Tech.
Carnegie Tech
was at that time.
And Youngstown, Ohio.
Right.
Right.
What was it like? What was the experience like at that time for you, being a young man?
Oh, that experience was just beautiful. Yeah.
And they treated you nice at that time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But some of the singing groups wasn't well known, so the money wasn't really right. So what we had to do was look for the best greasy spoon.
So many bands had to do that.
Yeah.
Did you have any problems as far as your race was concerned in other places?
Consequently, we didn't have no problem until we got to the lower part of West Virginia.
Okay.
It touches on the base of Kentucky.
Yes, yes.
So there was two cities, and you played them both, one in Kentucky. And one in
West Virginia.
Yeah, we like starved to death. We couldn't find nobody to serve.
I can imagine that.
Yeah.
Is that down near Charleston?
Right. Charleston, West Virginia.
Yeah.
Right over the border from Kentucky.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, start up again. I think we all have gone through a little bit of that not finding place to eat, because we traveled down in near Charleston too. We had problems there. Let me ask you this: Did you write your own music, or any of it?
I've always arranged all the music that I play.
Right.
So I wrote arrangements and compositions.
Mm-hmm. What started you doing that?
Well, I spent some time in CMU, which was Canadian Tech then, and I was one of my majors was composition.
Which is good. Very good anyway.
Yeah.
That's wonderful, yeah.
So at that time we was playing all the hit records, so I would take it off the hit record,
Right, which was good.
Right.
You arranged and were improvisations that you created later used by other performers? Was some of your work ever used by any other?
Both.
I think you mentioned when we talked before. You mentioned that you and Ray Brown played together.
Ray Brown and I. Ray was in one of the groups.
Right. Aftermarket.
Yeah. Right. Ray was one of the groups that we had.
He's a fine bassist.
Oh,
one of the greatest I can imagine in the world.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, I tell you, we first saw this genius. I wrote right out little figurations for Ray to play.
Mm-hmm.
And we played them. So, meantime, Cootie Williams' band was down at the Stanley Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And the bass player was from here. I'm trying to think of his name.
Okay.
But the bass player came up the year on the Harris on the hill. And he says, he played that. He played it. Let me see if I can play it. He couldn't play it. So in the meantime, I'll see you tomorrow. Do me a favor and rehearse tomorrow. So we rehearsed. He brought the whole band up.
Get out of here. Cootie's whole band.
Yeah. And Brown was a genius.
Mm.
And we didn't know it.
See that?
And everybody was saying, Jesus Christ, you played that.
Mm.
So after that, Brown connected with a traveling band. And he went on the road. Then he wound up with Dizzy Gillespie's group in the formation of Bebop.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest is history.
It's history, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that you and Brown had got a job down at one of the hotels here.
Down at the Wimpton.
And I thought that was really amusing. I want you to tell that story.
Well, Brown, we got the job and we seen all these confectioners here and it was always looking somewhere for music.
Mm.
So Brown stuck his bass in the hotel. And on the breaks, we would go up and play for the confectioners and made a lot of money doing it. We played a half an hour. Jim Brown would stash his bass, and we go back to working. Well, meantime, our boss at the time found us, found out about it.
Right.
So he snuck into one of the convinced us we was playing,
mm-hmm.
and he whispered out, "You're fired."
Did you keep on playing until you got your
Yeah, we kept on playing. And nothing to lose.
That's pretty good. I thought that was...
I went to the guy and I says, "Are we fired?" "Yeah. You ain't use my job to make extra money on, you know."
Right. But that was it. Well, it was innovative. At least you thought about trying to make extra money and everything.
Well,
I thought that was real amusing. Now, naturally, this interview and the whole project that we're doing is about Local 471, the history,
right.
and of the club, you know, the
weekend. Right.
And what was your relationship with the union?
At one time I was to delegate to the National Union.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to know the officers pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Hess Jackson, Pernell Gibson
mm-hmm.
was
right.
in there.
Right.
And I was the delegate to the union.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was pretty well run for the time it was.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had to move to East Liberty.
Yeah. I remember that. Well, how about the club? Now, did you have what was the relationship and your thoughts about the club that they had there? It's not the union now, we're talking about the club itself. You know, the difference between the union and the club.
Oh,
did you enjoy
it? Was great because guys like Max Roach, when they came home with Jamal, Ray Crawford,
mm-hmm.
anytime anybody would come in town, that was the place to jam. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the camaraderie?
Camaraderie was good, at that time.
And of course, I know most of the musicians there, at least on the weekends when they work, they would all end up down there.
All end up down at the club, right.
See who was in town and shake hands and just talk about the gig they had or whatever it might have been.
Right.
Most of the musicians I've talked to and interviewed had a real wonderful warm feeling about the club
itself.
We had some that the union and stuff, but most of them understood, you know, what was going on. There'd be a lot of obstacles as far as the union was concerned.
Oh, yeah.
And we weren't allowed to play town-town and things like
that.
Right. Yeah. What was your relationship with other musicians at that time? Were they friendly?
At that time, there was a lot of camaraderie between musicians because we all played similar music. Mm-hmm. But when the different styles changed and came into being, then I saw it widen a little bit, the camaraderie.
Right.
Bit of it, yeah. Right.
Well, were there more places to play at that time?
Especially
for the black musicians, the African Americans.
There was a lot of places in the Hill, and East Liberty was a pollution of places. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, what would you say happened to that part of our society? What happened? What caused the black clubs to decline?
Well, first of all, economics did. Mm-hmm. They couldn't stand to open a club with they raised taxes on them, the owners raised rent on them, so they just couldn't exist. So they all folded.
Now, in our interviews, we've noticed that you were a club owner.
Right.
And what was were they the obstacles that, of course, in your time, it was the musicians demanding exorbitant amounts of money, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. Well, I had two clubs. And
what were their names?
The Attic I had from 69 to 76. Mm-hmm. And for Harper's, the Attic was low down, located in Market Square. Mm-hmm. Harper's, my latest club, and that was from 82 to 88, was located in the Oxford Building. Mm-hmm. Both of them was really successful, and I sold them. The reason I sold them was because the demand for money on entertainers that could make you money became very high. And I was at the point of burnout. I was working 18 hours a day.
They say that's the only thing when you own a place like that, and you were playing sometimes that's awful hard. Yeah.
And when you own a club, you gotta be there.
That's right.
Because it's all cash.
Oh yes. One of the things is if you're not there, you're gonna lose.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I heard Buzzy, Mr. Robinson, say that many a time.
Yeah.
Bartenders were running the place and everything else. And just didn't work out right.
Right.
But it was an enjoyable experience, I imagine.
Very enjoyable. Yeah.
Name some of the stars that you had at your last club that played there.
Carmen McRae, Joe Williams, Dizzy Gillespie, Stan Getz,
Ahmad Jamal.
Yeah. Ahmad Jamal was here, Billy Eckstein. Who else was there?
Well, that's enough right there. I remember you had Carmen McRae in.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, I went down to see quite a few of them that you had down there.
Yeah, Ramsey Lewis.
Did the people support, especially the African American people, did they support your club?
The African American, sadly, shall I say, did not support it. Attic and Horror Harpers.
Right.
It became 95% white. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the African Americans' money wasness is the biggest, the other race, white race.
I can imagine.
So I give that as a reason that they didn't support the club. Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes, of course, this is my personal opinion, I think there were enough professional and businessmen, sports people, so forth and so on, to do better than they did. Sometimes we have a problem with that, but I won't get into that right now. With helping each other.
Right.
One thing that we should do.
Right.
Did you do any work for the WPA project? You didn't have anything to do with that. Let me ask you, how often did you go to the Musicians Club, would you say, on an average week or something?
52 weeks in a year. And I was there. I was there 48 of them.
I think I was there the other part, too.
Yeah.
And, of course, where was it located at?
On Wiley Avenue.
Oh, yeah. And is that right? That's right where the Civic Arena is
right
now.
Right, it's all that down.
Did you have any thoughts on when they were tearing the hill down? What would happen to the people and what would happen to economics? What would happen to jobs and so forth and so on?
It was painful to think about. Yeah. They made a whole group of people readjust their lives. Yeah, they had to move.
And especially the black businessmen.
Black businessmen,
had to hurt them extremely much.
Yeah. Right. Oh, we had Stanley's.
That's true. That's the name we were trying to think of last time.
Yeah.
On the corner of Crossroads of the World.
Fulton and Wiley.
Yeah, that's right.
Right on the corner, yeah.
And I remember Mary D used to always say that.
Crossroads
of the Light of the World.
Yeah.
Well, did you ever play at the place called the Bamboola? Did you do any work down there?
Oh, yeah, Bamboola Club. I would sneak out of the house around 2 o'clock and about 1 o'clock in the morning. Then open till 2.
That's right, that's when it started, yeah.
And I'd go to the Bamboola Club and make the job.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, later on in life, my mother, my late mother who was dying, and says, "You know what? You thought you was fooling me, but I know you were sneaking out of the house."
You wasn't that sneaker.
No, no. Oh, I was 14 and 15 at
right,
the time.
Right. Well, now, my remembering of the Bamboola was when Turntine and who else played there? Billy Webster and... Roger, the piano player.
Roger, right.
You can't think of his last name. And who was on drums? Cecil, I think.
Cecil.
Cecil Brooks played down there.
Yeah.
But that was after. That was a while after, I guess. But now I heard that you played at the Grill for years.
Yeah, I stayed at the Grill from I would say the early part of the 50s to, late 50s up until 1969 when I played when I opened there.
Were you working on the weekends there?
Well, no, during the week.
Did you work during the week, too?
Yeah.
How many nights? What, three?
Six nights.
Six nights?
The hill was exploding.
Right. Six nights?
Yeah. See, we got almost as many white people as black people.
Well, I was getting ready to ask you that. They supported, I know the Grill, because I used to go in there quite often. And even up at Birdie's, it was almost the same way, too, as far as the clientele.
Right.
Being from both races.
Right.
Well, do you think they got along better then? Well, what do you, they'd sit beside each other, they ate, they drank, and did you have any problems there?
Well, my opinion is they got along together, whites and blacks, a little better, because we was always subject to be subservient to them. Therefore they could go anywhere with the attitude between about you and me.
Mm-hmm.
It was not until the revolution, I call it, wanted rights, that the two races became isolated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they stopped coming to the hill.
Yeah. Right.
You know.
But at that time, they seemed like they I can understand what you're saying. Of course, you could walk anywhere you wanted to.
Right.
At that time, but 3 o'clock in the morning didn't make any
difference. Crime wasn't prevalent.
That's right. Regardless of what race you were, nobody bothered you.
Nobody bothered you. Yeah.
And of course, nowadays we call it the good old days, because I know I used to be on the hill, and I was from East Liberty. Had no problems at all.
Right.
Really enjoyed the comradie there. Did you play at the Musicians Club at all? Any?
Oh yeah, I would get in sessions out there.
Yeah. That was on Wednesday night or something.
Wednesday night.
They only hired the piano player and the rhythm section, I think.
Drummer, piano, bass.
Yeah.
That was it.
But they had so many horns up there sometimes that you couldn't even get up on the stage.
Couldn't get on the stage. Right.
And of course we used to always holler, try to tell the horn men not to take 900 courses.
Yeah.
Because by the time they got through, the piano player was boiled.
They tell me that's happening at the U-House.
I mean, so yeah. Too many, everybody's trying to take too many courses. Did you attend any of the union meetings there? I guess you did.
Yes.
And it says here, tell me about the club. I don't know what that really means, but I guess within your heart, how you felt when you were there. Did it give you an uplifting feeling?
Well, yeah, because you would meet there with me.